Morning. Okay. Welcome, everyone, to the humble Emacs introduction workshop. My colleague who wanted to assist me with this actually figured out that he realized that he doesn't have time now. So he left me on my own, but that's okay. I think we can manage. And he was here for the cool tricks to get you excited about Emacs, and I'm here for the boring stuff and the introduction. So if you are still interested in cool tricks, I know a few, but I can't show that many, you can come around tomorrow again during the lunch break. He will be here again, and then you can take a look at certain aspects of his way of using Emacs. So first of all, who here is and doesn't know anything about Emacs or doesn't use Emacs at all? Okay. Oh, yeah, that's good. Okay. And the other ones are hardcore users or intermediate users or something. Okay, great. So I'm going to first introduce you to the, I don't know, somewhat arcane or different terminology used in the Emacs world. And also, well, how to get started doing something with that. And maybe also, it's very important, a bit of history, how it came to be. So Emacs is one of the oldest text editing systems you can imagine or are still in use, which is originated from something called Tico Editor, macros. That's where the name is coming from, actually. And was, of course, developed at MIT. And as you can see, there were different flavors and iterations of Emacs during the whole time. And the one we are looking at today, or mostly, which is mostly used today, is the GNU Emacs implementation, which was started or published by Richard Stallman in 1985, which is also my birth year. And then there was a brief forking going on with Emacs. No, it wasn't very brief, but by now it's almost over. And we are back to mostly GNU Emacs today, which is quite okay, quite nice, because it's less fragmentation and less duplication in the community. So we have pretty good product there. So you could actually say it's the oldest still maintained open source project, but I'm not sure if it's true. MIT scheme may be a contender, so. But it's probably the most widely used and oldest for that, or whatever, you know, combination of these properties. And it, huh? X Emacs, I think it still lives. Does anyone use it? It still exists, at least. And there was a brief period, or maybe even long period, where it was quite advanced. It had a graphical user interface, way before GNU Emacs did, for example. And only when Stallman turned over maintainership, it started to pick up some steam again. I think that's somewhat correlated. But for now, and there are dozens of other forks and small re-implementations and blah, blah, blah. So this is only, these are only some milestones, nothing comprehensive. But just so you get the perspective that it's a pretty old thing, actually, which still makes sense to use today. So what can you do with Emacs? First of all, of course, you can do gaming. You can, that's pretty important, actually, for some reason. Sorry, I already started. Then most people tend to use it for coding or source control management also. It's somewhat interrelated. And generally text processing. I mean, coding is a special case of text processing, maybe. But also for authoring prose, or for writing blog posts or email. What, presentations? Sure. Yeah, this presentation is written in Emacs, by the way. I can show it later. It's generated from an Emacs mode and exported to HTML. That's how that works. Or you can also edit LaTeX with it quite conveniently and stuff like that. You can use it for system administration. Like there's a process manager built in that works on all POSIX systems, and I don't use it like for that myself, but some people do. Or you can there's a shell built in, no, multiple shells actually, or terminals, terminal emulators file management is also a very strong point. So you can completely replace your, I don't know, what do you call it? Conqueror? No. Yeah, you know, the file manager. The finder. And I think even it's even a bit more convenient. And you can use it for basically any kind of application. So you could say Emacs is like an application framework, if it wouldn't sound so negative. So I won't say it. Emacs is mostly an environment, is a nice way to put it, maybe. So some properties of Emacs, or why is it, why does it work like it works? It's the main reason, I think, and that's why we have it in this track, is because the Lisp is its extension language, or it's ELISP, it's a special case or special implementation or dialect of Lisp, is its extension language, but that is actually, oh, sorry, I forgot an A there. That's actually saying not enough. Emacs itself is completely, like 90% of it, what you use as a user, is written in ELISP itself. So if you want to extend it, you don't get some tacked on second class extension interface like you do with most editors. You actually get to work with the core functions that build up the system. And that's where the power comes from, really. So you could say that's very dangerous, because of course you can really fuck it up and destroy your Emacs, but on the other hand, it's also very powerful. So it's a bit like Unix in that regard, I'd say. Then the main strength of it is the user interface concept. I will, of course, present that here in a while. And because it unifies all kinds of tasks through the same kind of interface. So you, once you learn how to operate the basics, which is hopefully what you take from here, you can basically live inside Emacs and learn the stuff while you're working with it. And if you get a new extension, most of it is obvious or self-explanatory. So that's a really good concept. Imagine, or compare that to, I don't know, Eclipse, for example. I don't know much about Eclipse, but of course each thing comes with its own GUI, and you have to learn the GUI again. I think it's comparable to functional programming, object-oriented programming, maybe, I don't know. So you have, with object-oriented programming or class-based interface programming, you have to learn each interface, and with functional programming, data programming, you have just some basic data types, and you just have to understand how to work with them, and then it clicks and then works. Another thing is, which stems from the Lisp part as well, I think, is that you don't need to restart it, or not very often at least. If you install an extension, for example, you just load it and it mutates the system somewhat, or it installs itself in the system, you call it, and then it's there. Unlike, for example, web browsers, which most, well, most of them require you to restart it when you install an extension. And that's, of course, from the, as we have heard today many times, from the interactive development model that most Lisps actually employ, as we've seen in your talk, especially. So what you actually have is an environment that's just a Lisp evaluation or a Lisp environment where you can evaluate expressions in, and it happens to be a useful thing or a useful environment to edit text in. And from that you gain introspection. So like Florian showed in his initial closure talk, where you could just print the source of a function or the documentation, that's exactly the same in Emacs. So can give a quick, can quickly show how that works. At the very bottom, I'm going to, well, execute a function that's, let's say, forward character, right? So forward character, it forwards the point one character. And if I want to know what it does, I can ask for describe function, run the describe function, and say, what does forward character do? And it tells me what it does. So it's completely introspective, and it knows about itself. It's self-aware. Sounds a bit spooky. Right, you get this context-sensitive kind of help system. So you are in a mode and have some commands available, and it's documenting itself, because the mode or the environment knows what's available and knows the documentation. So it all works kind of nicely. the base system comes with more than probably even more than a thousand or thousands of commands, which are ready at hand. So very primitive ones like the one you saw, forward caret, which just moves the point one to the right. Even that thing is a function. Entering anything into the buffer is also a function. So everything, or a command actually, so you can call it interactively, like I just did. That means you have lots of building blocks, lots of Lego blocks you can build extensions from, and everything the core system does is exposed as a function for you to write extensions. Right, as I hinted at, there are over 30 years of development in total. So the concepts and stuff have evolved over a long time, and the implementation is quite solid, I would say. Maybe the Guile part is still missing. It's coming, it's being worked on. Right, another advantage is that it has a very big community and many old-time users which really have used this for all their life, which are also most of the time very helpful and friendly, which led to a huge amount of extensions. And there's the awesome Emacs wiki, which contains everything you can imagine. If you just think of something you want to do, you just type it in there, and most of the time somebody has already written a snippet for that. And if not, then you find the building blocks to do it yourself. But that's more advanced, and I won't cover how to write your own extensions in this talk or in this workshop, of course. That's something more profound. Well, it's not so difficult, actually. Maybe we can take a look at it if you're interested. I want to keep this a bit open because, first of all, I'm 50% of the personal resources now, and I only want to get you going, and then you can, for example, suggest something you're interested in, or, I don't know, somebody likes programs a certain language, and then how does it work in Emacs, so we could do something like that. There are a few more widely used things, or more widely used, it depends, which are based on the concepts of Emacs or are clones of Emacs, like GNU Readline, for example, the thing which most of the time sits in your shell to make command history and reverse search possible, has by default Emacs key bindings. So all navigational and search key bindings, they work like in stock Emacs. That's where that's coming from. There are lightweight implementations like this micro Emacs with a G for some reason, or GNU Xile. They are like Vim. Many people say Vim is so nice because it's starts up instantly and it's available everywhere. Well, it's kind of true. OpenBSD ships MG by default too, and it's a very lightweight implementation. You can just fire it up on a file and it's there immediately. The normal Emacs is a bit more sluggish, of course. Well, it's not so bad on modern machines anymore. There's the terrible Aquamax thing that's basically obsolete. I just put it in there because some people use it, but I tried to accommodate it to OS 10 and it's not really widely used anymore. There's Climax and many other re-implementations in different Lisps, which is kind of interesting. The eLisp dialect that Emacs is mostly written in is not a very nice Lisp. I mean, it works and it does the job, but it's kind of old-fashioned and very, well, a bit crafty. For example, you don't even have namespaces. Like all the other implementations we saw today, they have namespaces, and eLisp still doesn't have it, or you can't take it on anymore. So very often the people get the idea, well, why not implement a Lisp in an Emacs in a proper Lisp? And Climax is one of those attempts. There's one for in Scheme, it's called Edwin. Now there's somebody even started one in Clojure a few days ago. It was announced on Hacker News, I think. So every Lisp has its own Emacs implementation, of course, and they all fail because as I said, the 30 years of development, they have yielded led to so many extensions, you can't really reproduce this in a reasonable amount of effort, and so nobody really succeeded in that so far. But that may change. Sometimes stuff happens. There's a Haskell. Of course, the Haskellers have to have their own. I don't know if it's used. Do you? I don't know. it's apparently this the same concept, but with Haskell instead of Lisp. Then there's some nice web browser. Well, mostly Conqueror is the only web browser. Minnow is dead by now, unfortunately. As they put it in there, it's a Node presentation. I just updated a bit, but some parts are still in there which are not relevant anymore, unfortunately, but okay. So Conqueror is a nice implementation of an Emacs, a web browser based on Emacs ideas. So you get the same user interface concept built on ZooRunner, this thing that runs beneath Firefox and the like. And it exposes all functionality like history backwards and stuff like that as functions as well, and you can just work with them. But the extension language or implementation language is JavaScript, of course. So it's nice, but also a bit limited. Or there's a window manager, StumpWM, which is what I'm using here. It's also based on the concepts of Emacs, but written in Common Lisp, and it manages your windows and has some different operations for that. So there are many things working in this, which work in the same niche. And if you use all these together, you most of the time stay in the Emacs way of doing things. If you have to leave the Emacs itself at all for some things like web browsing, it's most sometimes it's the best way to do it because not everything works so well in W3M, right? But most things. So, okay, a few I don't know, just a few questions that you might have, like why do you use Emacs instead of something like NetBeans or Eclipse and IDE, a traditional IDE? One main thing is that it's completely keyboard driven. So there, okay, it's not quite true anymore, like the one I showed here. You see they have a menu bar up there and some, or what is it called, tab bar and menu also. So it's gained a bit of a graphical user interface, but most users actually deactivate this after a while and because it gets in your way, even this small amount of graphical user interface, oh sorry. And this actually, after a while, you get to appreciate that you have 10 fingers and not just one arm, so you don't have to touch the mouse for every thing you want to do, or some things in these IDEs are only possible by using the mouse, or you have to come up with custom shortcuts, or I don't know, or if even if that only works if you're lucky enough that somebody thought this might be interesting to put on a shortcut, if it's not there and doesn't work, of course. So because Emacs is written with keyboard-driven interaction in mind, it works very well with that. For today's standards, the resource requirements are very low for a full-blown IDE thing like that. So back in the day, Emacs used to be called 8 megabytes and constantly swapping, but that's from the 80s or something when it took up 8 megabytes and was quite large, but today, by today's standards, it's increased a bit to, I don't know, 20 megabytes in the default mode, but it's still very lightweight compared to that. And right, as I already said, you don't get distracted by GUI elements cluttering up your screen space. Like in the default configuration of NetBeans or Eclipse, you get the sidebars and top bars and bottom bars even, and so you just have a little square of your screen estate left to actually code, which is what I like. Why not Vim? I think you used Vim, right? Something like that. I would say there's no real argument. Of course, this is all subjective and a matter of taste. You may prefer to use the mouse or I don't know what, but it's my experience that I liked working with keyboard shortcuts. It's just faster for most things. Vim is not as okay. I got this one the other way around. So Emacs is all encompassing. Vim is more fits more with the Unix way of doing things. Like Vim is the thing for editing text files and nothing else. And Emacs tries to be a general runtime system for every kinds of stuff. So I don't know. It's a different model, and you just have to see if which of those fits better with your way of working or thinking. And of course, VimScript is a terrible extension language, and we all know that, I guess. I've never used it, but we still know it. So having a Lisp is quite nice. Having a these kind of configuration language, they tend to grow into terrible contraptions, which gain loops after a while, and then terrible variable scopes, and it just VimScript seems to be one of those. So, as I said, I can't tell from the first-hand experience. Oh, you can, okay. So that's a reason I'd say if you prefer that, then take a look at Emacs. Okay, any questions so far? For the meta part? Okay, very good. From now on, this is going to be a bit more hands-on, and everyone who has a machine with them, they could install an Emacs right now on the for the operating system. I've collected a few entry points for that. So if you are on a Debian or Ubuntu or Debian-based system, you can use this snapshot repository because the new version of Emacs 24.2 or something has been released just a few months ago. So it's not in, at least not in Debian stable, of course. But I would recommend using it because it has some improvements for user interface-wise, like nicer font rendering and nicer color theme support, and it's quite worth it. And also a package manager, so that's what we're going to use later on. Otherwise, it's a bit cumbersome to install extensions. You have to do it manually or through your package manager, and it, of course, has old versions. Yeah. 24 something. It doesn't matter which exactly. 24.2 is the latest one. 0.2 something. Ah, okay, that's just a release candidate. Yeah, but I think it's available through all these, so you can choose whatever you like. Right, I have no idea how well the Windows version works. I hear every now and then that it has some issues, but I hope there aren't too many Windows users. I can't help them. Yeah. You can. You will not be able to follow all things, but the basic movement and navigation and search, blah blah blah. This all works the same. But handling extensions, that's where Emacs 24 is different and better actually. Yes. YMAX? No, that's completely different. Well, you can use YMAX for the basic stuff. I think that should work. YMAX is quite interesting. I didn't mention that. It's a complete implementation, a pretty complete implementation of Emacs in the browser, in JavaScript. I don't know. Is there a demo somewhere? Live demo, right. Oh, sorry. See how slow it is to work with the mouse? Okay, so. Yeah, right, this doesn't work. I can't even navigate with Control-N, so. No, you shouldn't use that, but it's an interesting hack, so you can, if you are web developer and you need to put in, you want to provide your users with a useful text area, you should use that, of course. And the OS 10 packaging has very much improved since last time I gave this workshop, so you just go there or use Homebrew, and they should have a, I don't know what it's called, DMG package thing, and it most of the time works out of the box. Please don't use this Aquamax, that's obsolete. So I give you a few minutes to, I don't know, get set up, and I hope no issues arise with that anymore. Packaging is a bit of a problem with Emacs. So I have to think about how to do this now. This can be, where's my actual Emacs? Oh, sorry, this is a bit annoying to use like that. Can you still read this if it's that size? Or is it too small? It's okay? Good. Yeah, I'll keep it that way then. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't have any data points on that, but I think you should be fine with it with a stable one. Ah, green is installed and up to date. Did you check whether it's available in testing? 24 is available in testing. Okay, yeah. Debian. Maybe I'm moving down here now. This can get a bit annoying. Wait a second. Ah, there's Ubuntu PPA, apparently, so maybe that's better for Ubuntu. Yes. Yes. You can use it, but you can't do the customization later on. Then. So the basic stuff works the same. Otherwise, it's just different for every platform how to do it, or you have to do it very manually. And in 24, it's very easy to do. So there. Maybe I can. Will you follow them? You don't have to. Don't feel obliged. Is everyone aboard? Still hacking? Aren't you gonna fall? Yes, maybe you are. So while you're installing, I can show you the Lisp interpreter here. So this just enters something, and I can evaluate that and prints. It shows it down there. So there's a Lisp system in there somewhere, hiding it in there. I think something like that works. No, sorry. Ha. What's the? IELM, right? No, IELM. It's really a stupid name. Yes, right. That's how it works. So there's Elisp. And of course, in old school tradition, everything is uppercase here. It's really nice. Yeah, shouting in the 80s. In the 70s, maybe. What happens if I call forward? Interesting. Aren't there also keywords here? Yes. Hey. Someone still need some time? Is everybody set? Okay. Okay, seems like everyone is kind of ready. Okay, no worry. Process finished. Ah, I have another and more interesting example, I think. We can do toolbar mode. Oh, sorry. No, why doesn't that work? Ah, so. Of course, you have to pass a zero. That makes sense. So I just modified my environment, you see? Tap bar mode? What's the other one? Menu bar? There it's gone. You can also get rid of the scroll bar, I think. So now that's how Emacs looked about a while ago when you started it. Of course, that's not very approachable, and that's one of the drawbacks. Maybe the ramp up time is a bit it's a bit longer, so you can't dive immediately in. But that's a price to pay. It's worth the price. It's okay. The shell, the REPL, it's MetaX and then IELM. For inter Emacs. What's that actually? Yes. Interactive, it doesn't say here, but I guess it's right. So I just opened the documentation of that function again. And I can also jump to the source file defining that function. So let's see what that says. Maybe it's in there. Oh yes, we are right now looking at the gzip file. That's true. Here. This was created in 1994. So, some archaeology here, and we find. It still doesn't say what IELM resolves to. Thank you. But you're probably right. Okay, but that's for later. Forget everything you saw. I'm going to reactivate those so it looks the same on you. And menu bar mode, right? Ah, wonderful. Wonderful. Everyone fine? Good to go? Still downloading? Yeah, the network here is not very fast. Ah, okay. Yes, it's a bit of. Yeah, we should have done that. Good. I'm glad that the network actually handles this. Yeah, 24 is great. 24 anything. Okay, maybe I can already proceed because slowly with the next steps because the barbecue event is looming, so don't want to keep you too long here. Oh, by the way, we can continue in the lunch break tomorrow. If you have finished eating, then just come here and we can. Help you fiddle or help you with problems if you want to explore it a bit more overnight. So, okay, first we need to learn a bit of conventions here. So that's what we basically need to bootstrap ourselves into Emacs or our brain into Emacs. There are a few ways to shortcuts are of course everything is based on the keyboard shortcut on keyboard shortcuts. So you need to know how to read them and it's the Emacs way to express that is with a leading uppercase C with a dash means press the key following the dash with control and M with followed by dash means meta together with the key that's following the dash. And Meta, on today's keyboards, it's mostly the alt key, except for Apple keyboards, I think. That's the command key, by default, at least. Although they do have an alt key, but you have to remap that if you want that. So you read this as control M, which in most other modern systems is expressed like that, or control maybe is contracted, and that means you press control together with M. And in this case, this will create a line break. So if you press control M here, you get line breaks. There's another way to combine key sequences, and that's with a space. So this says press control plus X, then press M. So it's you start from the beginning without holding down control. So control X and then M will get you into the message mode, which is for composing in an email. Yes. Yes, there's something else. So that would be written like uppercase, like that, sorry. CXCM. So it doesn't stay activated or something. Yes. It means you have to release the control key in that case. Oh, yes, one more thing. What also helps a lot is, because many sequences start with control or are combined with control, it helps to remap the control key to your, useless caps lock key, because then you can use your pinky for pressing it. Instead of, well, you can still use your pinky, but you have to twist your hand in a bad way, and then it leads to repetitive strain injuries, I heard. Okay, so that's how you read this stuff. And yeah, here's an example for pressing, holding down control. So you don't have to press control X, then release control F, but you can hold down control and then press X and F. That's how that's read. How you have to interpret this. And that's the usual way to do it is to hold down control. So it's a bit like playing piano, maybe. I don't know. Okay? Everyone on the same base for now? So this is what we need, the vocabulary we need to learn the next, to understand the next slides, which will introduce you to, first of all, the help system, because once you know the help system, you know how to help yourself, and the rest is just falls in place. It's not true, but mostly. So, as you now know, this reads as press control H and then followed by T. So control H, then T, without control, and that will take you to the interactive tutorial, which is it's just a text file, and you are taught what I'm trying to teach you now as well in an interactive way, and you edit this text while learning the commands. So it's quite cool if you want to, I don't know, you probably won't keep everything in mind now, and if you want to train a bit, then just start that tutorial. You only have to remember this shortcut then, and all the rest the rest you will learn there. Then there are many other help commands, like control H M takes you to the help view or to the help of the current modes you are. This buffer, I didn't explain that yet, so doesn't matter right now. But if you do something with Emacs, your Emacs is in certain modes, and it has always has one major mode and some minor modes. And control H M takes you to the documentation of the major mode, and I think the minor modes are included here as well. So you have something that you can read top down, and hopefully in the end get a big picture. I don't use that very much, so I don't know the specifics. What I use all the time is control H K, for example. So you can try that now in your Emacs if it has started up already. Yeah, I don't know, it shouldn't take so long. So press control H and followed by K, and then it will ask you. Right, in the area below, I don't know if you can see it on the screen now. At the very bottom, which is called the interactive, what is it called? The mini buffer, which is something Emacs will ask you questions through, and this interacts with you through this little slot down there. So there it asks you to for a key you want to be to get the help or the description of. So you can press control H K and then press, I don't know, I. And I pressing I without anything in the default mode we are in now means insert the letter I. So it is bound to many ordinary text characters, self-insert n. I runs the command self-insert command, which is an interactive built-in function and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. But this is a link. You can follow it, as we just saw. This just means if I press I want to enter I. So this is the self-insertion command. Not so interesting. But Control-HK again. Let's try what we just had. Control-XM. So you can enter any combination down there. And it takes it to the documentation of the function that's currently bound to this, or of the command that's currently bound to this shortcut or key combination. So now we see control XM runs the command compose mail, which is an interactive compiled list function, blah, blah, blah. This technical detail, but it's all exposed to you. So there's nothing hidden, really. It's all, everything is always there. Alex. Oh, I have never turned that on. Does anyone know? Try meta X and then. Yes, right. You could just, can you just kill your Emacs, completely close it, and then delete your, in your home directory, there's a directory called .emacs.d or .emacs file, and just delete those. Okay, yeah, then delete that. And this should be the culprit. Right, it tells you that this key is bound to that function, and you can also reach it through the menu bar. The menu bar is somewhat integrated in this key chain concept, so they are virtual keys, these submenus. And it also tells you here the signature of that command, which is just a regular Lisp function with some optional arguments. So you could just go ahead and call that here, compose mail. I don't know. Okay, it doesn't work like that. Let's say compose mail to. Then let's see what happens. I can evaluate this with pressing Control X, Control E when I'm behind an expression, and then it takes me there. So this is just what the key binding does. It executes this function, and then there may be some interactive arguments as well, which are documented there. So then you get an idea what this key is bound to and what it does. And you can of course ask the other way around. You know the name of the function, but you don't know what key or what key combination you find it under. So you could say Control H W for where it's actually where is command. So where do I find this command on my keyboard? And you could say something like, I don't know, search forward with regular expression matching. So the default search is not regular expression based, but you want to know how to search for regular expressions, and you guessed that the command is probably called search forward regular expression. I didn't actually know that right now, so I just guessed it. And then you press enter, and it tells you down there in the mini buffer that this command right now is not bound to any key, so you're out of luck. But of course, you can still call it, but I will show you later how that works. Control HB is similar to the Control HM at the beginning, but it's much more concise. It just shows you, just gives you the raw key mappings, key bindings. And so let's see what we already know. X, control XM, there it is. So this is an overview of all the bindings which are currently active, and you can just scroll through that to discover stuff. So one of the things working with Emacs is that you discover new stuff all the time because it's so huge. And you meet another Emacs user and he tells you his tricks and you tell him your tricks and or their tricks, whatever. And there's always something you didn't know about. So every other week you learn something completely, you were completely oblivious of, and then it's super useful and has been sitting there all the time, hiding between all the functions. It's really cool. It's like a like an adventure game. Ah, it reminds me of what TJ said about game programming like a game. Okay, so right, and there's also Control HF, which is actually quite very much the same as Control HW, except it also tells you the documentation if it's not bound to a key. So I don't know, it doesn't really make much of a difference. So we could compose mail again, and it tells you that it gives you documentation, and it still says where it's bound. So if it's not bound, it would just say it's not bound here. Control HF, like search forward regex. Yeah, there's no key binding here then. So it's, that's a bit redundant. It's probably evolved somehow, and one of them was there before the other one, and now we have both. That's also something you discover in Emacs a lot, some duplication of functionality and some inconsistencies, but most of the time it's pretty well thought out. But with big systems, it's like that. It will show all of the key bindings which are currently active. So it depends on what mode your file or the buffer you are looking at is in. So if you are in your email mode, you have different lists there. So it's context sensitive. That's one of the points I had, right? So yeah, this would show you everything that's available. It can be quite a long list. But it, as I said, it's most I mostly use it to discover how to use a new mode or something, if it doesn't make sense right away. One thing I didn't mention here now is the info mode. I don't use it myself very often, but it's actually quite nice. You press Control H, I of course. You see, the, some of them are the thing, just a prefix name. So if you press Control H, I, you get to this info browser thing, and it's nicely formatted and laid out documentation of all stuff you have installed. For example, I don't know, make files. Automake is here, and all stuff like that. So everything that's installed in your system and has an info file, most of the GNU projects I do, but not many other. is Kyle in here? I don't know. Oh yeah, there it is. And there's, yes, there's a man page mode too that has a bit more. The, but the, this info mode is quite, it's a bit more advanced. So you have, it's more like a web browser, and you have many nice features. You can even have bookmarks. And ah, SICP is also shipped. Or did I install it? No, I installed it, I think. But it's quite a nice format to read. See, it's even with nice headings, and it's quite a cool thing. It's not used very often. Now see, you learned something already. Even though he's a young, a long-time user. So, info mode is also nice. Of course, the most useful one is the Emacs info. Here, there it is. I don't know how to search in that. Maybe so, like that. I have no idea. So there's Elisp intro, for example. Emacs Lisp intro, even two. Nice. Yes, right. Somewhere there's an Emacs. Each Emacs package comes with an info page, or many of them. So there's a lot of stuff in there. So I forgot to include this here, but it's cool. Right. Then now we know how to help ourselves and how to look stuff up. That's already most stuff you need to get going. But there's one problem with Emacs. That's terminology. Because it's so old, it uses different words for most stuff we use today, because it's coming from a completely different context, from some AI lab, or in, stuff we use on the desktop today is from Microsoft or Apple, and they have different terminology and it evolved differently. So we have to map those names in our head, but it's not as terrible as it sounds. So we have to know that, for example, in Emacs terminology, a frame is what we call a window. So the left side is Emacs, the right side is what we how we would call it. So this thing here is a frame, and this is a frame. And a window is actually a split window, or a split. It's like this. We have two windows in the frame now. Okay? So this is one frame, this is another frame. Sorry, this is one window, this is another window. Can be a bit confusing. So then we have buffers, which show up in the documentation all the time. And a buffer is actually the content of a that can be displayed in a window. Yeah, you can say that, I think. But not all buffers are visible. Does anyone know here? Can buffers be not accessible? Or do you know it? I don't know. I think they're always available. So a buffer is something you can display in a window, and you can display the same buffer in two windows, for example, like we have right now. So if I enter something here, I see it in both windows, of course. So the windows are views on the same buffer. Different views on the same buffer. I don't know why I put view in here. It doesn't make much sense, I think. So it's more like the model, actually, in programmers' terms. So they can even be at different offsets, you see? Now I can scroll down here. Oh, there's my text. So now I have two views into the same file. If it's a long file, then I can compare stuff, for example. So that's a buffer. And the buffer is used for everything. So as we saw, if I look up some function or some key, then it pops up a window with a buffer, and the buffer is just like the buffer I have above up here, But it's a read-only, so I can't enter stuff, but I could make it writable if I wanted, but it doesn't make much sense. But other than that, it's the same thing. So there's no separate concept for documentation, no documentation viewer or anything like that. Everything Emacs wants to display resides in some buffer, and you can access those buffers programmatically. So if you write some ELISP code that knows how to interact with the contents of a buffer, then, well, that's basically what all Emacs modes are. They interact with contents of buffers. And if I press I and it calls the function self-insert I, then it puts this character at the position my point is residing at. This is the next thing we have to learn. A cursor is called a point in Emacs, or the cursor is called the point. So yeah, it's not too difficult. Then for selections, we have the word region. Yeah, it's okay, no overlap there. And many commands operate on regions or optionally operate on regions and stuff like that. You have to know that. Then there is kill for delete also for quit. So the command for quitting Emacs, okay, I didn't tell that, no, is kill Emacs. Then the command for deleting something is, you have to press Control H, K, and then press the delete key. It will tell you it's called, it's called delete forward character. Sorry, it's not kill forward character. It's a bit inconsistent there. But like there's this one, kill as expressions. Well, kill is usually it's just for deleting anything. So the clipboard, for example, is called the kill ring. So everything you cut from your buffer will be put in your kill ring. It sounds a bit martial. No. the kill ring will only contain stuff killed more than one character or something like that. So if you press backspace, it won't put every character into the kill ring. That would be very annoying. So only if you do something like that. Ah, okay. No, if you kill a buffer, then it's gone. Yeah, unless you persisted it somewhere. But it's gone. Right, and pasting is called yanking. So I think in Vim it's the other way around or something. It's I don't know why. It's also a bit annoying if you already know Vim, then it's confusing, or Vi. So you kill this, and then you press Control Y for yank, and this pastes it again. So that's how it works. Then we have the mode line, which is this one here, the gray one. That's what we call status bars in most other programs these days. And a key combination is called a key sequence or key chain, chord, there are some various words for that, and just have to be aware of those. I'm going to put up the presentation somewhere and link to it on the workshop page, so you can look up that. I don't know if there's a terminology cheat sheet in the documentation. I don't think so. But I think it's okay. We can live with that, and it doesn't add much confusion once you've learned that, in my experience. Okay? Everything clear so far? You don't have to learn and memorize everything now, so you will pick it up while you do it. Okay, now we need to learn a few basic commands. So right now you are in a position where you could actually look everything up, but that's still annoying. So you need how to board something. If you started doing something like, I don't know, press Control S to start a search. And now you decide you don't want to search, you have to abort this somehow. And every command that requires input and you decide not to input something because you change your mind, you can abort with Control G. Or I don't think that makes, that's not a memorizable word. Give up, yeah, maybe that. That's good. God damn it. And you can also, most of the time, pressing escape three times, hammering on the escape key, most of the time that also works, but I found that it sometimes, I don't know, it doesn't work, so I stick to Control G. Something like that. But I never use the terminal Emacs, I always use the graphical one, so something else. I don't know, maybe there's a reason for that. Right, and then there is meta X, which is your entry point to everything if you don't know, if you don't have a key binding, for example, for a function, but you still want to use it, you press meta X and then enter the name of the function to call it. So meta X, as I said, most of the time it's Alt X on your keyboard. And then you can press tab to get some suggestions. So let's say the function we had before, the search forward, you can always press tab complete there. And if you don't know what to type, you can press it twice and then you get a buffer again, suggesting possible completions. Right, and now you can enter a search for a reg expression and press return, and then it will fire off the command. So we can now search for a regular expression. Oh, okay, that was not very interesting. So that works for every command there is, like even forward character, yeah, to move the point one character to the right. That's your way to communicate with a process, basically, the low-level way to communicate with a process. So to activate a new mode, for example, you need this to install it, and then you want to use it, then you call it through meta-x. Okie dokie. So then we need to know how to use. That's really annoying at the beginning, even in this tutorial. I think it's not. It comes a bit later, and then you end up with all these split windows and don't know how to get rid of them. You have to restart Emacs all the time because you don't know it. So I'm going to put this first. This all works with the number keys, except for the last one. So Control X 2 splits your window horizontally, and Control X 3 splits it vertically. And you can repeat this until you have no screen left. Right. What I did now was Control X 1. So I have a few windows, and then I press Control X 1, and it will remove all the windows except for the one my point is currently in. So I will. Okay, these are all the same. This is a bit boring. Let's put these two, and then I'm in the upper one. No, let's go to the lower one. And press Control X 1, and the other ones are gone. That's pretty nice. And Control X 0 is the other way around. Yeah. So I don't know how it figures out where to put your point then, but it in the one you were before. So it removes the current window, or kills the current window. And then there is a note to type Control X O, which takes you to the next window, to the other window. So you can go in cycles like that by pressing Control X O all the time. It's a lot to type, right? There is this. Yes, please. Yes, so you have to be careful. If you rebind something globally, it may collide with local bindings, and of course. Yeah, winner mode is nice. Oh, damn. Yeah, right, for the shift. Yeah, that's annoying. So there are some trade-offs. I think winner mode is even shipped with Emacs now, yeah. So, no, wait, it doesn't work with control. There was another one. Shift, sorry. No, it doesn't. There was another one. I forgot how it's called. Let's see. I have it in here somewhere. Wind move. So wind move. Move. Yes, that's what I do. So I run this and it sets the wind move key bindings, which allow me to press shift and then use the arrow keys to move into a direction instead of going in cycles, which is quite handy. Yes, sure. Yes. No. That would be annoying. No, there is one, but it's pretty unwieldy to use, actually, especially if you want to redo stuff. I actually have no idea how it works. I know how to use it, but I have no idea how it works, so I can't explain it, unfortunately. Maybe somebody else can. It's explained in the tutorial, but okay, but it doesn't work as your usual undo command, so it's a bit tricky. But I can. It's bound to Control _. No, sorry. Yes, there's a tree mode.
That history in a tree, and you can move over to the different branches of your history
Yeah. It's pretty fancy, so yeah, it's actually a tree structure, I think. But it's not very apparent how the tree looks. So this visualization mode is quite nice, and the other guy wanted to show that, but I don't know how to use it, but it's interesting. And I think there's also a way to dumb down the undo so it works like in every other editor. But I'm going to show the keybinding for that later on. But there is, so. This is a tricky thing. So, as I said, some concepts are very different from, not only differently named, but also work very differently. What is also nice, I mentioned the kill ring, but I didn't actually show how to use it. So if I have some text here, and then I kill this and this, and now I yank it, but I want to, and I can toggle my old kills. So it's a ring of all stuff I have previously killed. Or there's some limit, but I can cycle through everything that I recently killed. So that's why it's called kill ring. And that's quite handy. So you can cut multiple items and paste them in different order and stuff like that. Right, so another thing you have to keep in mind how to that it works a bit differently. Okay, any more questions so far? Just ask like you do, that's great. So that's how you get rid of windows. Most of the time you have to remember how to get rid of them, so Control X1 is the way to do it. Now, zero, yeah, that kills the current one. It depends, okay, yeah. Some modes, if you do something, they pop up a window, but they leave the point in the one you are right now, and some they move, and so you have to do the right thing, of course, yeah. That's a bit tricky. But it's cool because every mode, once you've learned these basics and navigation techniques, every mode builds on these buffers and windows and it just works the same. So you've learned it, all is fine. So right, of course sometimes you want to write files to the disk or so save buffers, and that works by connecting a buffer to a file name basically. I think it's connected to the name, not to the inode. But I may be wrong. As I said, these buffers are everywhere, and they all have names, but not all of them are connected to a file. But you can just say Control X, Control S to save the current buffer to some file. If it's already connected to the file name, it will just write it there. If it's not, then it will ask you for a name, so we can this is my Scratch buffer here. It's a buffer that's always there, which contains stuff you can just enter stuff there and evaluate expressions. So let's save it there. So now it wrote this. And if you press Control X, Control S now again, it writes it there again. So that's easy. There's a connection between the file name and the buffer now. If I decide to write it to a different file name, I press Control X, Control W, which is like save as in most other systems, and then it will ask me for another name. And from then on, this buffer is connected to that name. So you basically change the reference to another name, and now it writes there. Simple, right? So once you know that, you know how to write files, and then you can do most stuff. Of course, sometimes you also want to open a file, and that helps. Oh, I don't have killing buffers here. Maybe they will come in. So you press Control X, Control F. This is not find file, but find file. find file for opening file. And it works as you would expect. This buffer is now automatically connected to this file name. So if I save that again, it will not ask me for the file name, of course, because it already knows that it's connected. Of course, to switch between buffers, you need to, other than by splitting windows, that's annoying. Sometimes you just want to switch the full screen view, for example, or the content of one window to another buffer. That's what you use Control XB for. So, Control XB, and then it asks you for a buffer name. And by default, it will have the last one you visited here. It also even says that. If you want the default, you just press return. So switching between two buffers, back and forth between two buffers, is always Control XB return, Control XB return. It seems a bit complicated, but it's not that bad actually. So You could rebind that to something else, but I'm not aware of anything. And it's actually quite okay. Can be done. Working with the default key bindings is probably a good idea because many tutorials and explanations build on this knowledge. And if you memorize them, at least for the basic stuff, that helps. If you don't, and you won't run into all these collisions with major modes, which assume that you work with the default bindings. So there's no conflict resolution or something. What you define is just what matters, what holds everything, and it's good to stick to the defaults in this case. And of course, you can you can hold down the control key, so you press Control X, Control B, and then you get another buffer containing all buffers. So I heard you like buffers. It puts up this list, and it's actually an interactive menu buffer. So it's also read-only, and you can see. You get an overview of which buffer is connected to which file. That's nice. And you can also press return on the on one of those items, and it jumps there, right? So that's like a menu basically. And this buffer remains open. So the buffer list is called buffer list buffer is called buffer list. And then if you press Control X, B, then it's there again. So it's just like any other buffer. Really convenient. Okay, so that's the basics you need to work with. Files and buffers, basically. You can, yeah. Questions so far? It's easy, right? Now is the point where you have to, I don't know. You have to force yourself to do this because it really pays off. But it's a bit annoying at the beginning. Instead of using the arrow keys, which are inconveniently placed on the lower right side or lower right side of your keyboard most of the time, or even further right to the right. You use different keys or different combinations which are located in the somewhere on your keyboard where your hand already is. So you don't have to move your actual your arm all the time to the lower right corner of your keyboard. So it saves it really saves time, and you just have to move your fingers to do that. And these commands are most of them are memo. What do you call it? Mnemonic. So. Control F is forward character, and Control B is backwards character. So you can press, you can hold down the Control key. It's, as I said, if you bind it to caps lock, it's very convenient. With your pinky, and then you use your index finger to press F, your left index finger to press F, and your right index finger to press B. That's easy, and you don't have to move your hand around. Yes, of course. It depends if you're right or left-handed, right? But F for backwards and B for backwards. Oh, sorry, F for forwards and B for backwards. That's nice. So don't expect every command to be bound to a key like that, which is memorizable like that, but in case it's nice. And Control N and P, that works for lines. So, and you can use that with your right hand. If you are working with, with a standard layout. There are some people here I know. Oh, no, he's not here. I'm not sure how well it works with Neo or Dvorak or something like that. No experience with that. So that's movement. These movement commands work in many modes. Of course, the basic ones work in many modes. In read-only modes, you can often press N, P, F, B without control to move forward, backwards, up and down. So of course, because you can't enter text there, it's just bound to the keys without control. That's a convention. It's not enforced, but it's a pretty good convention. Okay, and if you press the same F and B with meta, you can jump word-wise. And if you press control together with alt meta, I don't put it in here, but you can also put control together with that. Ah, in some modes it works. In, for example, in code modes, it means jump to the next expression instead of the next word. This can be handy. So you can basically deduce these things by just adding more modifier keys to your combinations and see what happens. That's quite nice. Yes, I think we can find it. Wait. Yeah, typical. Yeah, there it is. So that's where it comes from. Because some modes are very excessive at forcing you to press many modifier keys at the same time. So that's how it works. Right? And I don't know why the screen is okay. Right, so then Control A for jumping to the beginning of the line, Control E for jumping to the end of the line. That's also very easy to reach with a single hand. And MetaV in control, I don't use that very often, but the page up and page down keys are most of the time also very far out from the home row, is what it's called, right? So that's why these are also convenient, but I use them rarely, but you may. And yeah, another way to navigate in Emacs, it's a common way to search. So you look at the text and you know, I want to go there. Let's say I want to go here to software. So I just press Control S and start typing software. And while I'm typing, it's highlighting all matches and I can jump between the matches. So most of the time, that's the fastest way to go to a place you want to edit. So press Control S and then start typing something that's in the buffer. And then press Control S again to jump to the next occurrence of the search term, or you press Control R to jump to the previous one. In that case, it's a bit boring. Let's say A. So I can with Control S, I can just continue, and I could also continue to type to search for more A B, and then it search for A B. Can also delete something. So it's iSearch. It's called iSearch for interactive search because you can just navigate through the search results. Huh? Oh yes, of course, yes. It's not related. It's not an Apple product. You see there's a the dash between I and search, so. Yes. Yes. Yeah, hopefully not. We have to remove this feature from Emacs then. So searching is a common way to navigate in buffers as well. And very convenient. Okay, we're almost done with this basic command stuff. As I said already that selections are called regions, and you don't hold down a key to select something, but today's Emacs allows holding down shift to mark something, but in regular Emacs you just press control space to start selecting from where you are right now. Then you move around, for example you search. Let's do that. It's more interesting. Wait a second. Oh man, where here? So let's go here. Then I press Control Space. Now it starts. It says mark set down there. Yeah, it places a mark. That means it starts the region there. The region starts there. And now I can press Control S to search for assume, for example, and then it extends the region there. So Control S throws the anchor, and then you move on. And now you have a region, and now you can operate on that. Like, I don't know, kill it, but I can't kill it because it's read-only, but could also act on it by searching for it. If I do a search and erase now, it will work on this region, for example. Yes, control backspace will kill a word backwards. That's also very, oh man, this I'm not used to using this buffer switching mode. Damn it. If you switch buffers, if you press Control XB, you can also enter a non-existing buffer, and it will just go there and create it under that name. So it's quite convenient to just fire up a random scratch buffer to try something, or to demonstrate something like that. So pressing Control Backspace will kill the word left of the point. Control S Backspace, that means Control Shift Backspace. We haven't seen that now so far. Control Shift Backspace will kill the current line, so, and put it in the kill ring. What do we else? Control K, like in these all work in like I said, all work in read line. So in Bash, for example, you can just use all these commands. Also for killing to the end of the line with Control K, or Control Y also works for pasting what you just killed. That also works in read line. It's pretty convenient. If you realize this way. After using Emacs for quite a while. Meta Z is also very nice. I don't use it very often, but it's cool because it's called Zap to Care. And then you enter a character you want to kill up to that character. So if you press D now, it will kill everything until the D. I don't use it very often, but it's cool. Control W, I think I already mentioned that, will kill the current region. So there you go. On meta W will do the same. I mean, it will not kill the region, but it will place the thing you just in the region in the kill ring without actually killing it. It's like copying in, but I think let's see. The function has a funny name. Killring safe, yes. Please. Right, control Y for pacing. And that's how you work, how you toggle through the killring, right? So you press control Y for pacing something, and then if you don't move the point and press meta Y, you can cycle. So first control Y and then keep pressing meta Y to cycle through the killring. And control slash or control underscore gives you the undo mechanism, which is this tricky undo thing. So the one problem I have with this is to redo something. If I undid a few things and then I wanted to redo the last thing, that's not you have to do something and then you have to undo again and then it works. Then it will undo your undo or something like that. It's a bit mind bending. But you will learn when you get into that situation. Okay, almost done. You have a question? Yes. 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 You? Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, the mark can also be used to as a, jump to marker. But that just keeps the last place where you marked just one mark. Ah. Okay. Cool. So it leaves the trail. Okay. Cool. I don't use this. I think I heard it, but I never use it. Yeah, of course. Yes, this is, I think this is called registers, right? Where you put it, you put locations in the register. There are many, many concepts in Emacs and placing marks or bookmarks. There are many options for that, and it's really a zoo of stuff. So you have to pick and try what works for you. Okay, so we were just talking about this argument, and control U is the universal argument, and it pops up in documentation often. So it says this command does this and that, and if you pass the universal argument or call it with the universal argument, then it does that. So what that means is you press control U before executing the command, so or before entering the key combination of the command. So you press control U and then you say control F for moving to the right, it will move four characters to the right. That's one of the things the universal argument does. Move, do something four times. I have no idea where that comes from. Probably indention or something. It's a indentation. It's probably something, I don't know. I don't know where that came from. But you can also press control U, then press a number like 5, and then say X, and it enters 5 X's. So you can use that to repeat N times. Everything. So you can also do search and replace n times. Okay, that doesn't make sense, but something like that. Every command you can execute can be executed multiple times in succession if you pass a universal argument with a number. And you can also just press control with a number if it's a single number. Oh no. 99L. Okay, so I've just pressed control 99 and then L and it entered 99S. So that also works. And for example, for the search we just saw, if you pass it the universal argument, then you get regex search. So that's actually available. Yeah, right. The other one I was looking up was not interactive regex search, so that's why it doesn't show up. So you can turn your regular iSearch into a regex iSearch if you pass the universal argument. So it's usually usually means activate the other thing or use the other thing. Like, yeah, this is something you have to keep in mind. Okay, that's it for the. For the basics, it's quite a bit, but as I said, once you digested these basics and are comfortable working with them somewhat, the rest basically is self-explanatory or exploratory. So, any questions up to that point? What time is it? Oh, it's quite late already. Are you hungry or thirsty? So you basically. now know how to at least know or heard of how to, or if you followed along, maybe you also tried how to work with files with the basic input-output concepts or interaction concepts of the of Emacs, and you didn't do anything with extensions or whatever or modes even. So we just used the fundamental mode, which allows you to enter text and yeah, save it to file and stuff like that. But that's also that's already pretty useful. And as I said, you can build from there. So let's take a look maybe at a few interesting modes like I presented earlier, if you're interested, and keep it short, and maybe we should either move it to tomorrow. Good point, yes. Yes, we need to do this, of course. So whenever you start Emacs, it will be in the startup default startup configuration. It doesn't do anything interesting. So you want to do, I don't know, let's say we want to get rid of this bar here, and we need to call this function at startup. So what we do is we create a .emacs file, which is, we can do this now because we know the file command, of course. So in your home directory, you can create a .emacs file. And this one is automatically executed when Emacs starts up. And it's just an elisp program. So you can enter any elisp expression in here. So let's put in menu or tab bar mode 0. Is it right? No. What is it called again? Toolbar mode. OK, that hides it. Turn it on again. save to the file with Control X, Control S, as we just learned. I didn't tell you the shortcut to exit Emacs, because you don't need it most of the time. But I thought it's now you need it, because we want to demonstrate that it works. that's Control X, Control C. And in the default configuration, it won't even ask you whether you want to quit. So it's a bit dangerous, unless you have some unchanged saves, unsaved changes, right? So I exited my Emacs now. Let's start it up again. Oh, sorry, I didn't actually exit. I'm running in Emacs daemon mode, so it doesn't really quit. Right. So, and if I start it up now. Oh. Oh, yes, very clever. Thank you. so you can see it works. Did that work now? It started again. Oh, no, sorry. That's my setup. Let's just do it the right way. So there you go. Ah, right, you didn't see that on my configuration. No. So as we can see, the toolbar is now gone. So that's your entry point to customizing Emacs. For example, there is a function to load a color theme. If you want to interactively call a function, meta x. So we press meta x, and then we say load theme. Load theme is the command for loading a color theme. It will ask you for a theme name, which you can autocomplete. So let's say Misterioso. Okie dokie, looks good. So we want to keep that, and we can just but we just, I will load a lighter one again. What's the default one? So I should be able to just put it here. Load theme Misterioso. Okay? So just the thing we just entered intuitively, we can also just put it in the file, and it should, if everything works out. Right, so there is my color theme. So there's no configuration system or anything. You just call the functions or set some values, and everything works like that. Of course, this can grow into a really big file, and which contains lots of random crap. So you want at some point organize that a bit nicer. And for now, but I won't show you anything about that because that's a matter of taste. And for the beginning, it's good to just have one .emacs file and stick your stuff in there, and you understand how it works. Pretty simple. Okay, let's load. Question? Let's load a brighter one again. It's okay. So, yeah, question? Yes, what he refers to is the so-called customize mode, and or something, or customize. It can reach this when through, of course, MetaX customize, right? And there you have an interactive system with ugly buttons to configure stuff like that. So I think there's also a theme. As you can see, this is just a buffer. So those look like buttons, but they are just text with a bevel background and stuff like that. So you can press them, but it's, oh, press that. Yeah, this system exists. I don't know how it got there. It's a matter of taste, I think. It generates code. So if you edit something here, then it writes a file somewhere and stores what you set in the file. But you won't learn a lot by that way, of course, because you don't use the ELISP system, really. You just tweak a few settings in this GUI thing. But I think, okay, it's okay to start out, I guess, or to discover stuff. But you are much more flexible if you really dive into the ELISP and learn how to do loops or something like that. For example, let's say you want to bind something to all keys from 1 to 0, and then you just loop over them and, I don't know, generate key bindings. And that's not possible with the customized mode. So I guess that's probably some split in the Emacs community. some people like it and some people don't really like it. So. It's a matter of taste. I don't use it at all, so I can't really say anything about it. And this actually works quite well with having this in the file, and you learn more that way. Nice. So what I wanted to, why I urged you to use Emacs 24 is that there is now a built-in package management system, which is called package, I think. Yeah, package. So you press MetaX and call package list packages, and it that's where it shows that there is no namespace system because everything is prefixed with package. And this lists all packages which are available on in this case it's just the GNU repository, so it doesn't have that much, but it lists all kinds of extensions, and you can install them by just let's take the memory usage mode. Just press return on it and then press the install thing. So this is similar to the customize mode, but I think in this case it's a better tool because I don't know, the other way would be to manually assemble files from the internet, scrape files from the internet and put them somewhere and manually compile them. And this is it does everything for you. So you just press enter and then it will download and compile and install it. And now we have the memory usage thing. I don't know what it actually does. Okay, so it says right here what it does. Provides a command memory usage which lists all buffers and how much memory they use. So let's try that. You see, I just downloaded this from the internet. It compiled itself and installed itself and loaded itself. And now I have the command in my Emacs. So it's I could install and extend it from right inside of itself. That's cool. Of course, I have now downloaded code from the internet, which is probably not trustworthy, but I think there's no real trust model in there. But it's at least a curated repository in that case. So unless someone messes with your DNS, it should work. So let's try the memory usage. Okay, very interesting. I didn't know that mode, so it's not interesting. Okay, so that's your gateway to getting interesting modes. I actually have the Marmalade repository activated, I think. But there, Emacs itself already comes with very many interesting modes, so you don't actually need this at the beginning, I guess. For example, the DRAD mode, that's what I hinted at with file management. So you have a command control-xd. Control-xd asks you for a directory, let's say code public. Chicken eggs. So it asks you for a directory, and it opens, of course, a buffer, which looks similar to the listing ls-l would give you. And it's interactive, and it's read-only, of course. So you can press N and P to navigate, to go up and down between the lines. You can also press Control and Control P, doesn't matter. And you can actually enter these directories. Okay, there's nothing in there. With Q, you can kill the read-only buffer, or you usually can kill read-only buffer. So you just press return, and then if you don't want to go there, press Q, return, and then you can also enter a file to edit it. So that's a nice way to navigate your file system, Ivan. So you can also, that's very nice to navigate if a bit more conveniently. You can also, so for example, rename files. So you press Shift R and it asks you to rename, rename the thing I'm currently on to whatever. There you go. So now if, yeah, right, if you press G, it updates the view. So now G is either Control G is abort and G is oftentimes refresh, or Control G is also oftentimes refresh. I don't know why. So but in some modes it also means or does it? No, it's indeed, yeah. In read-only modes, pressing G without control means reload in, but or refresh. So whatever. Those are just conventions. So it's nothing to rely on. So that's really cool. You don't have to break your flow to rename a file or stuff like that, or to do more complex stuff. You can mark many files at once, or directories in this case, and rename all of them. Move them to some other place, of course, in that case. Yes, I don't dare. we can do this. Of course, this is a read-only buffer, but I can unlock the read-only mode, and I can say change to W dirend mode, which means write dirend mode or something. So now this buffer is writable and actually changes. If you can commit it, or let's not do that. Oh, maybe it's okay. So you just rename a few things here, edit a few things, and can even edit permissions here. That's not possible. Okay, I think it works. Dates, something like that. I think owners. Right now this is an editable mode, and I do a few things here, and then I can press Control C, and then it will do this. So I could just search and replace in that buffer to rename a few directories. Yes, right. That's a bit dangerous, but sometimes it's really handy. It's there if you want to use it. Or there's another nice mode I recently discovered. It's called occur. You just run it. It has no default binding. If you run it, it asks you for regular expression. And then let's say UTF is boring. Let's say var. Okay. So and then it will make open another buffer containing the matches, and you can navigate those. And jump to, wait a second, there's a way. Well, of course, yeah, you can just jump to the results there. It's different from the interactive mode, of course, because you see all the matching lines in one number. And you can also unlock this one. I always forget how does it work. As you can see, I don't use it very often. It's occur edit mode. So now I can actually edit these occurrences here inside that buffer. I wonder if it doesn't work for read-only buffer. Okay, shit. But you get the idea. So you can use to edit search results. It's quite handy sometimes. So there are many, many, many more modes like that. There's a question. Yes, sorry. For files or in files? Yes, there is a locate thing interface, I think. Yeah, locate. You can just call it from inside Emacs. Let's try it. Okay, that was not good, but it works. What's that? StarCraft. Okay, StarCraft map. Yes. There's another nice one that's called rgrep, for example. It does a recursive grep across files, and let's say we search for define in files inside code public chicken eggs. Let's take a small one. No, that's not small. So there. So I search for a term inside this directory, and it does a. Oh fuck! That was. Sorry. Define. Search for define in files. Okay, I have to give a glob there. So there you go. And now it it executed this command, so you could also reuse this on your shell. And you can just, with N and P, step through these occurrences, and we'll open the buffers as you step through them, and open the files and buffers as you step through them. And that's a really nice way to navigate around in an unknown code base, for example. If you know, okay, I want to find all places where this token appears, and you don't have a, you don't have something like in Java IDE where you can jump to the places directly most of the time. Some modes are like that, but many modes are not. And then you can use this to conveniently find all occurrences of something in a directory. Quite useful. I use this very much, actually. And of course, the integration for most Lisps is very good. So you can connect into running closure processes, for example, and evaluate stuff in there. I'm not going to show that now, unless somebody's interested in that. Right. So any questions or ideas? Yes. Well, what it does, it downloads the extension, it byte compiles it. So Emacs Lisp has a byte compiler, and you can ahead of time compile it, so it loads faster. And then it drops it in your .emacs.d, which is a directory which is consulted when Emacs starts up. And then you have this elpa directory in there. And every extension gets a directory in this elpa directory, and it's auto-load. I think this file is loaded then. So it automatically executes this, and which doesn't mean it actually loads the package, but it will load the package once you run this function. So it's lazily loaded when you need it, and you don't have to configure anything usually to use it in the basic configuration. Only if you want to use, of course, if you want to customize it, then you have to put something in your .emacs. But if you just want to be able to use it, then you just just call the respective function, and you're good to go. That's a new thing, this list packages and installing it from the repository. That's and it's super useful, I think. It's also very good to update your extensions to a new version. Usually, before that, you usually download it at some point and then just kept it at the version you downloaded and didn't really get new features. Okay, anyone, anything else? I could show another nice mode I have in mind right now. So I would switch to my real Emacs now. That was just a blank configuration, and I'm going to delete that. Okay. Okay, shit, now my configuration is gone. You see, mine starts up a while, but it's not terribly long. And I'm going to load a brighter theme. Okay, so one thing that's already different, if I press Meta X, I have this fancy autocomplete thing down there. So this allows quicker navigation, for example. It's called I Do mode. I can show you if you you can approach me about it later. Let's load, load theme. The bright one. Okay, so one mode I really like is a Git integration, Magit it's called. So let's try that one. So I'm editing some code here, and now I make some changes. Edit something here, lol, and I delete something here. Okay, so now I can press Control C I in my case. And it will pop up a buffer of Git status, basically. But it's an interactive Git status. So I see all changes, and I can, for example, expand that and walk through all the changes there are I made to my file. And I can also jump there. If I press return, I jump to the exact position of that hunk. Very useful. I can also stage commit from here. So I can just say, OK, I want to commit this bit, but not that one. So I press S on that, bam. So, and now it's on the stage changes. So I've just staged this single hunk, and I can now commit with pressing C. It opens a buffer, remove some useless function. Okay, and now pressing Control C, Control C commits it. Now it's committed to my repository, and I can press L twice, and I get a view of the history, and there's my commit. So I can step through the history log easily, and I can also jump to stuff if it still exists from the log buffer. So this is the previous code, and I can just jump to the file that contains this change. It's quite useful for browsing code repositories. Yes. Oh yes, that's a third-party mode, so you need to install it first. It's called Magit. Sorry, it's spelled like this. You can install it through the package repository, I think. Sorry, no, you can't. Not by the default. Yeah, you need to add another repository. The default one that comes with Emacs, it's the GNU repository and doesn't have very many extensions because they have this complicated process of contributing. So first I need to undo this commit because I may use it and maybe I need it. So I go to the last revision, press X for reset, and then I'm back to my original state again, and I can unstage this change, and I can also kill this change. Pressing K, discard changes, yes, okay, then it's gone. So I can use most of the stuff of Git interactively through this mode, and it's really cool. Let's see. Okay, that's the repository. Somebody else maintains it now. I think there's a video tutorial of that in here somewhere. It's quite nice. And what you need to download it through package to the package system is the Marmalade Emacs repository, spreadable ELISP. it's explained in here how to configure it. I can't remember now. Somehow you have to do it somehow. You don't have to sign up. That's just if you want to submit something. Do you see it now? I can't remember, but I have it in my configuration. So I will also post a link to my configuration, which lives on Bitbucket, and you can steal bits from there. I wouldn't recommend using it right away because you have to. I think you should just start on your own and get rolling yourself, so to learn more. But there should be. I think it's an init AL because it's very basic. Yes. That's how you configure the Marmalade repository, but it also should be on the website. So as you see, it's just a call to a list function again, and you add something to a list that's named package archives, and it's yeah. So that should be possible to install. And you need to put this package initialize in your .emacs. Otherwise, what I just said is wrong. It won't automatically load unless you call this. So there are a few caveats. But you can read up on that on the Marmalade page. They show you how to configure it. Yeah, right. Sure. Mm-hmm. I wonder. I guess I haven't seen any collisions so far. I guess they would just show up both. So it gives you a view of both repositories if you. Yeah, it's quite a big. Yes. Well, you just have to try, I think. But they have versions, right? So could just use the newer one, or if it doesn't work, use the old one. So this is quite new at all, and there may also be bugs in there still. So don't. Don't be annoyed if it doesn't work right away, but it's much more convenient than it used to be, so that's quite cool. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Melpa, so that's new, probably. I don't know it. Okay, I only know about Marmalade, so cool. Yeah, another one. Ah, right, so they apparently have a lack. Yeah, just put everything in. That's cool. Maybe there's something in there that isn't in Marmalade. Marmalade is a bit slow, so it's not a bad idea to do that. Maybe I'll try that. Cool. Thanks for the hint. What is written in Lisp? No. Yeah, there is a web server in Elisp. That's true. You can actually run a web application from inside your Lisp, but I wouldn't recommend it, I guess. yes. There's also a web browser in Elisp. Oh no, it's not installed by default anymore. Okay, there's W3M is available as an Elisp package somehow. So we can do that. Email is very nice, I think. There are several email clients. Yes, you can also start a shell here, AnsiTerm, for example. Yeah, but it's I tried for a while, but it's not. You always have some collision somewhere, so it's not really great. So I stick to XTerm for that. What? Yes. AnsiTerm is the best emulator mode, of course. I think.
It doesn't integrate at all very well into your.
That's right. There's eShell, which allows you to, I don't know, pipe a buffer into a command and stuff like that. So that's really sophisticated, but I have not learned it yet. It's not completely, yeah. So AnsiTerm gets close, but not close enough for my uses. But you just mentioned SSH. There's a nice mode called Tramp mode that allows you to connect through SSH to another host and edit files right there. So it opens a buffer of a file that's living on another machine, which you only have access through SSH to. I could show you. You have just to believe me that it works. So let's say, yes, it also works to call sudo through open a buffer with sudo from an Emacs. That's true. So now I'm connected to my host here, and no, wait, it doesn't work. Okay, it seems to collide with my. I don't use it very often, but it usually works. Very good. Sometimes it's handy, but it's maybe a bit overrated. So. Don't put it on the advertisement. Thinking of another one. So this is the part the other guy, the other Moritz actually has wanted to do because he uses many more fancy modes, which are better show off effects. So I suggest we wrap it up here, or is there more questions? I mean, I will be around all evening, so if you have some more specific questions, just approach me. And as I said, we can meet up here tomorrow in the lunch break. Maybe you can dabble with the basics for tonight, and then tomorrow you will have some more questions or advanced questions. That's right, and problems. So that's right. Yeah. If there are no more questions, I say thank you very much for your attention and for your time. 's Oh yes, hello Mario. I think the tape's already at its end. Super nice.